At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The U.S. dollar. I welcome Alex Pollack, senior fellow at the Mises Institute, author of Finance and Philosophy, Why We're Always Surprised, and the co-author of Surprised Again, writing most recently for Civitas Outlook, published by Civitas Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. A new book by Kenneth Rogoff, Our Currency, Your Problem, restates why it is the dollar remains the supreme currency, the agreed-upon, desirous currency of the face of the earth, despite the vicissitudes of the late 20th century. Alex, a very good evening to you. That remark, the quip, the bon mot, our currency, your problem, was made by then-Secretary of the Treasury John Connally, former governor of Texas, a man who was often seen as a presidential contender. He was being blunt, at the same time witty, at a circumstance that was then extant and dominated the conversation. It was 1971. What had happened that the secretary made such an, we can now say, undiplomatic but candid remark? Good evening to you, Alex.
Good evening, and thank you very much for having me on. It was August 1971 that a world historical event happened, at least as far as monetary history, and that was the default or the reneging by the United States under President Nixon with the help of his Secretary of the Treasury, John Connally, as you say, to refuse the obligations under the Bretton Woods system of the United States to redeem dollars for foreign central banks or governments, to redeem them for gold at the fixed price of $35 equal 1 ounce of gold. That was taken as the linchpin at the time of the international monetary system, and the linchpin had just been taken away, or in the words of Ben Steele, who wrote interestingly about this, the dollar was the last ship anchored to gold. They had just cut the anchor rope and everybody was sailing off. They knew not where. That was true. So Connally went over to meet with the European finance ministers. They were very angry. They were going to lose a lot of money if the dollar sank compared to what they thought it would be, which the dollar did then do. And Connally's reply to this anger was this this witty zinger. It's our currency, but it's your problem. Was their problem also in those days? And the dollar is still everybody's problem all around the world as the dominant currency in the world, and therefore all the people holding dollars are affected by the behavior of the U.S. Fiscal deficits and the U.S. central bank.
In other words, there's only one central bank. It's called Jerome Powell right now. Okay, fine.
For the world, for the dollar using world, which is most of the world.
We go to the history of all of this, and Mr. Rogoff, and I believe I read you correctly, observed that the British pound was dominant from 1815 until 1914. That's 100 years, but not as dominant as the dollar. Is that correct? The dollar has surpassed its ability to go to all countries of the world.
That's what Professor Rogoff says, and that is correct. Note that 1815 is the end of the Napoleonic Wars, and 1914 is the beginning of World War I. These matters are tightly interconnected with war, always monetary matters, and with military power.
Why is the dollar strong? All right, let's entertain the reasons that Alex lays out for Rogoff. The dollar is strong because it's safe. It's a place to put your money. Is that accurate, Alex?
Well, it's not absolutely safe because nothing in finance is absolutely safe. People holding dollars can clearly lose money in inflation-adjusted terms. They can lose money in exchange rate terms against other currencies. And relative to gold, the dollar since 1971 has depreciated by 99%. So it's not absolutely safe, but it's safe on a relative basis, relative to the other fiat currencies of the world.
Why do the fiat currencies, some of which are possessed by superly productive industrial powers such as Japan and Germany, why do they acknowledge the dollar supremacy no matter what and not challenge it? And one reason might be military. You've mentioned the end of the Napoleonic era and the beginning of the breakup of the empires in the 20th century. However, at the same time, you know that the U.S. extends its arms of security around the world since 1945. Japan and Germany have profited from that. Is that why they're willing to lose money on maintaining the dollar?
Well, it certainly was an important factor during, I would say, most of the 20th, the post-World War II 20th century. Rogoff makes a very important point that this military power and being the dominant currency are definitely linked. In the British case, you had the British Navy dominating the seas and the Bank of England as the top central bank in the world, and therefore the British pound as the dominant currency. In the case of the U.S., you had global American military might and the dollar and the Federal Reserve. So from the point of view of countries needing the American military umbrella, it certainly made sense to help that out by investing in dollars. I've often thought when countries do holding dollars and even taking big losses on dollars was a way of helping to finance the American military presence, which they counted on and needed.
What appears to me to be the major consideration made for not challenging the dollar heretofore is the law courts and the transparency of our justice system, especially when it comes to terms of companies' reorganization, bankruptcy laws. Is that the driver, Alex, your experience, your long experience? Our courts, no matter what the complaints are superior about getting your money back?
The laws and the courts and the bankruptcy process. Now, Rogoff makes all these points in the book. It is a fundamental advantage if you want to have the dominant currency to have a superior legal systems where creditors can feel like they will get fair treatment. But paradoxically, on the other side of the creditors, he points out, and it seems to me it's a subtle and good point, that it's also good to have good bankruptcy procedures. So there are ways to reorganize debts in an orderly fashion. And I think about this as social infrastructure, and I do believe it is one of the really great advantages of the United States and the world. In order to be able to have the dominant currency and take advantage of financing from the rest of the world, to have the superior infrastructure of legal system, law, bankruptcy, and process for the rights of creditors, including in bankruptcy. Now, Rogoff goes on to say that all this also enables the United States to be a dominant economy in size and in vibrancy and in energy. And that's another part of the reason why the U.S. economy looms so large. The U.S. financial system looms even larger in the world. And that all supports the role of the dollar in being the dominant currency.
Just a moment, Alex. You've triggered a thought that I've had that I haven't been able to respond to. Why is it the complaining that's going on in Europe right now? We don't take risks. You heard the EU talk like this. We don't have an AI industry. We don't have a Silicon Valley. We don't have giant social media companies spanning the globe. Why not? And oftentimes it's expressed to me that we're not taught to be risk takers. We're taught to go safe. Is that an aspect of the dollar as well? That
I do think so. Rogoff says it is in the book, and that seems right to me.
That our bankruptcy, our bankruptcy allow companies that fail the first time to reorganize themselves and try again, and Europe does not. Is that true?
Well, I'm not an expert in this area, but the argument in the book, Our Dollar, Your Problem, is that we do have a bankruptcy problem that it allows trying and failing better than other countries. And if you can try and fail, you'll get more risk taking. And over time, if you get more intelligent risk taking, at least, even though many things fail, you will be more successful in creativity. John, I think who came and populated America? The risk takers who were willing to get on a boat and sail off, they knew not where, to a new land and see how they could do. I do think this greater risk taking propensity is deep in the American character.
I'm speaking to Alex Pollack, writing for Civitas Outlook at Civitas Institute. We've been praising the dollar. We're saying we're joining the parade. It's number one. However, when we come back, what can go wrong and why? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.